I'ma help the people close to me. They help the people close to them, and then hopefully friends of they friends, friends heed the notion. We started.
What's going on, y'all? Welcome back. What's going on, y'all? Welcome back to another season of Unguarded, season 3, episode 5. We introing DeAndre Moss. What's going on, young?
What's up, everyone? This is our last of the retired athlete series, and then the next one is gonna have a very, very special guest. There's been a big demand to have her on the show.
Yes, yes.
And I heard it's gonna be a little spicy, a little fiery, so we'll let you know at the end of this intro who that guest is, but we are gonna ask you guys for questions. So what's going on with you? Where are you at in your season? What's your plans for the summer?
Yeah, what's going on is, the typical all over the damn place. We got playouts coming up. Got to win these two games. Then, of course, typical for trying to find time to plan summer. You know, it's like when you get back home, you're trying to catch up with everybody that you haven't been able to, like, gradually catch up with and meet with over the past 8-9 months. So trying to fit in family, business meetings, and just leisure is hard to kind of plot that out within 3 months compact. So now just trying to figure that out while, you know, still maintaining doing things for Weave Off. You know, the pitch deck has been, as they say, the hardest thing. I mean, you Google it, they talk about it. I thought we would get past that, but nope. We're just like every other startup founder, I guess, worrying about the doggone pitch deck. So doing that, testing the app, just balancing stuff. Nothing too crazy.
There's a big birthday party this summer, right?
Grandma.
For someone very special in your life.
Yeah, Grandma. Yeah. Grandma Angelina, 80th birthday. She's been, she's always said she wanted her grandbabies together. So I think, truthfully, the biggest part of the birthday is to ensure all her grandbabies make it. And then, of course,
how many of you guys are there?
I mean, her grandkids, I think it's, see, one, two, is seven of us. Seven of us, you know, her grandbabies. And of course, her great grands that expands because everybody having babies now. So she definitely wanted everyone immediate. Her kids, of course, my mom, my uncle, those that are still here.
So is this like a day party or is this you know, what happens?
No, it's...
There's speeches,
It's going to be... It's a nighttime thing. But for sure, throughout the day, we'll probably be at the house kicking it. Everybody probably get dressed at the house before the party. So we'll probably have brunch during the day, just music, enjoying, celebrating her. We always telling stories at our house, so it'll probably be speeches happening. Non-stop reminiscing, but... At the party, it'll be, we'll probably have some people speak, dancing.
What's the drink of choice within the Davis clan?
Well, so it's not Davis. Davis is my dad. So my grandma is the she's a Jackson. Caesar Jackson. So they drink everything. But I think it's a mix. It's a mix of drinks. I think, you know, I think a lot of our family like dark liquor. I don't think there's one particular drink that people like, but my grandma, she likes more of her darker liquors in a sense than just light liquor. So,
like Hennessy or Crown Royal, or am I being?
She has like actually rum? She does love some Tito's. She likes to make her some. She likes Tito's. My grandpa liked Crown Royal, but she doesn't drink Crown Royal. She'll have some of it because a couple of my cousins who spend time with her, they come over with some Crown Apple and make drinks, sweet drinks, but she's not a sweet drink person. So, but yeah, she usually sticks to some Tito's, and then she does have one dark liquor that I can't pronounce the name. I don't know what it is, actually, that she drinks.
You got a dress? You got your
I'm not
ready?
Wearing a dress. I'm I'm trying to think what I'm going to wear.
Does your mom want
she's
you to
over
wear
that.
A dress?
Like I'm in my 30s now. She's like, whatever. Wear what you want. She's just so disappointed that, you know, the universe blessed her with two kids that do not have her fashion sense. So, you know, I'm like, at least
Josh either? Joshua?
Josh doesn't
either.
Have any fashion sense. I was like, at least I feel like I have some fashion sense. It's just, it doesn't match what you would have liked me to wear. But my fashion is on point. Sure. You just don't want, you want me to wear other types of fashion. Where Joshua, upstate New York.
And for the listeners out there, that's Joshua Jory's. How old is
he's,
he now?
He's 16 now. He's 16.
Is he definitely. Taller than you?
He's definitely taller than me.
Okay.
Got a high top fade still. Yeah. Looking like Kid Play from, what's the name of that movie? Kid and Play. House Party.
House Party.
Yeah.
The original.
So he's still rocking it. So yeah, he's 16 now, taller than me. No fashion sense.
He just has like no, he just has no fashion. Like he's not interested in fashion or he has like bad fashion.
I think he just, I don't know. He doesn't like care really, but he's also a boy, you know? So okay. He's like in that phase. So he just wants to wear his Nike, you know, Nike pants, joggers and a normal shirt and some sneakers. Like he's not trying to do all the stuff that my mom's trying to do.
Comfortable, cozy.
But no dress to the party. I'm thinking some linen. I might pull out some linen again.
With some sandals?
Some loafers. I need to find me some nice loafers. I want a nice loafer.
So we got Deandra
on
the episode. What did you think of the interview? Did you learn new things? Did you? I mean, I know you're familiar with her story.
I mean, definitely learned, you know, hey, the power of the network is always going to come through no matter what steps you take. And so, you know, it was definitely a blessing to have her older brother already venture into tech and be in that space to open up a few doors and at least just to tell her, you know, what she should go do. Like, go get this, PhD. I don't think he technically told her specifically, but, you know, it just shows like having access can always help you just get a step further. So that was something that was a little, you know, new. But at the end of the day, man, it's just like you just have to be persistent and just go the route.
Just go
the route you feel you want to do. Like, we got one life. If you fail, you know, you're going to figure it out. So that's the thing. It's like, just keep going.
She did mention something regarding athletes and failure and however you want to define failure and just rejection and how she got turned down from a couple things that she applied to and how that can be, you know, really hard because you're getting out of your comfort zone. But if you think about it, unless you're a super athlete that, you know, hits every shot you take and, you know, hits every ball that you swing at in baseball or whatever, like you're used to that. You're used to losing games. You're used to, you know, hopefully not too much, but you're used to probably rejection more than the average person, right? Like, there's not many things in my day that in my day to day or my week where I feel like, oh man, I got rejected in something, and how you just kind of keep pushing forward. But also that, it's hard because you're used to one type of rejection and the other.
Even rejection, like in the midst of what you're doing, like you'll have people, you know, you might have a president that's looking at every game. And you know they don't like you. You know, and they don't like the fact that you were chosen and you on the same team. You know, like that type of level of still having to persevere and perform in the midst of someone not wanting you there or energies around you waiting for you to fail. I think that is also something that I think is not easy, but we just do it. We feel like it's something that we just like, oh, yeah, it's a part of the game. But I guess, as people say, it is something that helps us. It's a skill set or, you know, a skill that helps in the transition. And so she feels and discusses that this is something that players should know that it's going to pay off for when they are in the workforce.
For all the listeners out there, we want you to subscribe, review, rate, leave comments. It really helps us with a lot of things. And there's also, we finally figured out a way to do it. We did have some paying subscribers at one point, and then things got a little weird and we couldn't access the account, but it's back up. So that'll be on the link as well. So every little thing helps. We're just doing this for the love of the community, would you say, Joe? Why do we do this? Why are we doing this?
We do it to just amplify the community's voices. You know, we got a lot of knowledge, a lot of experiences that, hey, one part of it might help somebody. So we feel like the voices that aren't really amplified, that don't have the big platforms, but they doing great, unique things, we want to at least try to get it out there best way we possibly can to help someone that's in the same boat of the other 99%. That's why we're here, and we're going to keep pushing forward, whether we get two viewers, listeners, 20, 30.
We never get two listeners, okay? We don't get two listeners. Three, maybe. No. And that's why next episode is going to be just me and Jory Davis.
Yes. Yes.
I will be asking her questions. We want questions from our listeners. What do you want to know? I don't think we really have, like, you know, obviously it's not a part of this package of retired athletes, so it's going to be. But if you have questions about Jory, if you have questions about WeVolve, if you have questions about whatever, let us know.
Definitely. Don't hold back. Let us know what you want to hear.
Because she won't. Because you definitely won't. It might be the spiciest episode of Unguarded. Yep. It might be the most unguarded episode of
Matter of fact, we gonna the intro Unguarded podcast. The intro song gonna be that Nas Spicy song. That's my favorite song right there. Nas Spicy. That's gonna be the intro audio.
Wait, Nas has a song called Spicy? What song? What?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
It must be a new one.
Unguarded podcast presented by WeVolve season 3 episode 5 with DeAndre Moss. Be sure to subscribe. Let us know what y'all want to hear. Leave us comments. Don't be shy. Ask questions. And as always, donate. Help us stay alive. Definitely got rewards coming.
Welcome, everybody. Today we have a very special guest. Jory, would you like to introduce her?
Yeah, we got the OG, DeAndre Moss. It's good to have you on the podcast. Obviously, came across your profile or in a different light than your playing career. Truthfully, I think I really started to notice you far as looking into your journey as you transitioned and was looking into, like, man, what is she doing? So it's good to have you on the call. It's always good to hear some gems you're going to drop. And so I know you're going to bless us with a few things.
I'll do my best. It's a pleasure. Thank y'all for having me.
In one of the podcasts that I listened to, one of the suggestions that you had for playing athletes to plan for their career after sports was to create a LinkedIn profile. And some of the things that athletes have said was like, well, what am I going to put? That I played on this team and that team and this team. So all I can put is that I've played on these different teams. I'm not an athlete, but if I was an athlete and I say, what am I supposed to put on there? You want me to put my stats for that season? Like, what can I put? You're telling me to create a LinkedIn profile. Disclaimer, you do work at LinkedIn.
Shameless plug.
What goes on there?
That's a good question, because I'm going to tell you, I didn't have one when I was playing. I definitely didn't have one. I'm like, well, you know, there's no visibility or market for professional athletes on LinkedIn. So why would I have one? I didn't really see the value in it until I started to realize, as players, we do so much more than just grab rebounds and score points, make free throws and get steals. It's all the other things that we have to do in terms of the working relationships that we have to manage and maintain with our teammates, how to get on the same page and learn and be coachable with coaches who have many different philosophies and coaching styles. Think of that as like your manager or your boss, right? You have to learn how to strategize and come up with game plans and execute on the fly. You know, in the middle of the game, shit does not always go to plan. We've all been there. I know Jory, it just happens. What do? That's what you put on your profile, because that's what you've been doing every day. And that's what you've grown to do, like, without even thinking. So it's not so much about the stats. It's not so much about, you know, the numbers so much. It's more as those other components that really make you kind of highlight those skills that are going to be applicable to other industries, because that's never really going to change. And I didn't even mention, like, working cross-functionally, working with other majority groups. Like, when we come over to we're the minority. We have to learn how to ingratiate ourselves into a culture, to understand, to get along well with our teammates. Like, that takes effort. You know, and when you're working in these different industries, how I'm working in tech, like, it's a multitude of different people you have to get along with every day. Like, but we've been doing that, right? So it's really step back from the numbers and things like that and really think about the things that we do every day as athletes. And we'll really kind of realize, okay, now I understand what I should be putting on my profile. On one team, you may take a more of a leadership role. Maybe you're the captain, right? However, that applies, right? In any other job industry whatsoever, that's what you put on your profile. How did you lead? How did you manage conflict? How did you inspire and motivate your teammates? Those are the things that they do matter. So that's what I would say to athletes and what you put on your LinkedIn profile. Put it all on there. It all matters. Nothing is for naught unless you just decide it's not important.
Jory, you have 1 week to update your LinkedIn profile according to DeAndre's tips. I will gladly take a look at it. Maybe DeAndre has 5 minutes of her day to take us to give you feedback on it.
Yeah, definitely got to update the LinkedIn. You know, I was thinking about this before we had the call. I was like, well, technically, could we get more, you know, strategic about putting the things other than stats? Like, you know, what if you're the person that multiple years throughout your career, you would have won with the ball in your hand in the last minute? Like, you know, we could get more detailed about the athletes, because sometimes every athlete on that 12-person roster is not doing the same thing. You know, the sixth man has to do something different. You know, sometimes the leader is not the person with the ball in their hand with 1 minute left down two. So it's like, yeah, when you bring that up, it's like you can even get more detail with what type of experiences and things you had to get through as being a player. But I definitely need to update that LinkedIn and get it right.
Definitely. You won't regret doing it. It's all about reframing. You know what I mean? Like, that's something that I had to learn, where really, like, connected with me thinking about those experiences differently. You have to reframe them and make them matter in the context that you're trying to make it matter to. And it all can be reframed. Was I a good leader? Sure. If that's what's important to who you're talking to, this is how I led. Was I strong? Was I, like, athletic? Sure. I can give you some numbers. What was I doing in the actual gym, bench press, vertical? I can reframe that stuff. I can pull that stuff out because we've done it. But you have to understand, like, your audience and what is mattering to them. But it's not like we're creating something that wasn't already there. It's not like we're embellishing. This stuff is true. We have to just understand that. And I think for athletes, I think the natural thing for us as we were, you know, navigating our professional careers, even in college, it's really like a numbers game. We know, like, the numbers are important. There's very few. I think when I was playing, the good clubs understand, like, the value sometimes is not always in the numbers and what someone produces on paper. But for the most part, it's very important to get your numbers as a foreigner over in Europe. That's just the reality. That's just how it goes. Like, you have to get your numbers. I feel like women's basketball was an individual sport, you know, embedded in a team game, because you had to get your numbers. And so that kind of made it a priority, because your livelihood kind of depended on it. Like, hey, I have to get my numbers. I have to get my stats, as well as team success. But what's more important here, right? And so they kind of, because it's so cutthroat, and it's kind of, at least when I was playing, it's just difficult to have longevity with one club to, like, build something. Like, you're here at one team, the next time you're on a different team. So it's like, I need to prioritize getting my numbers, because I know that that's what other teams will value. It's like, hey, Jory did this. This is what on paper she did. But what was her value to the team, right? Was she that leader? Was she that motivator? What was she the one who strategized with the coach to make sure we had a proper game plan? Maybe she was, but is that something your market, the other teams are going to value? It depends, mm-mm, right? And most times not, they did not. So you had to get your numbers. And that's why we are having this focus on, oh, what do I put on my LinkedIn? I had these stats. I had these numbers. No. That's not all that's important. You can say, I think to really tie it all together, hey, I was a great leader, a strategic thinker with the coach. We implemented, you know, X many game plans that led to, you know, a winning percentage that, you know, we grew season over season by 3 games. So the one season we won 3 games, the next one we won 6, and then the third season we won 9 games. That shows growth, right? but sometimes you don't really have that. So you have to frame these things and connect it to some meaningful impact in terms of numbers. But just putting your numbers alone, I think you're missing out on so many other aspects of what we've done as athletes that are very, very valuable to different people across different industries.
Now, DeAndre, are you just really good at time management, or did you just not sleep? Like, how did you play and get a PhD and, you know, do all this other stuff? Like, or is that just the way you've been your whole life?
That's a damn good question. Like, what I'm trying to think. Now, I have my time now. I was outside. Let's not get it twisted. It ain't like I ain't never step out. I had a great time. I think, honestly, I was just good about time because I felt a little bit of a sense of urgency. Like, I need to start investing in my life away from basketball, knowing that there would be a life outside of basketball. But once I learned, like, the cadence, I'm like, okay, we can't, like, practice 8 hours a day. I just really made sacrifices. It was really those in-between times between, like, the morning practices and stuff. Like, we have time, you know? Like, and so instead of me just, you know, sitting, you know, watching TV or binging something, I'm like, okay, how can I reinvest this time? Because I want it to be productive. I like to feel like I'm being productive on the daily. And sometimes that's rest, but I like to feel productive, and I didn't. There was a time when I got to Turkey, when I went back to school, I'm like, I feel like, okay, I've been playing for 3 years now, and it's great, but I could be doing more. Like, I actually have time to do stuff. Like, I'm not practicing all day. So, like, it didn't make me feel good. Like, that was, like, the only thing I was doing. But you actually do have a lot of time within these moments of practice after you've gotten your rest. And I was studying something that was just really interesting to me. So it wasn't hard for me to say, hey, I actually want to learn this. I actually want to open this book. You know, it was sports psychology where I got my master's, and my PhD was in general and behavioral psychology. That's the stuff I'm interested in anyway. Like, I could just talk about that all day. You know, no, I don't really need to prep for that. Like, I just want to, you know, talk about it and hear different perspectives. So I think that makes it easier. So, hey, this is something that you want to do. Because if you're trying to do something that you're not necessarily interested in, it becomes a little bit harder to prioritize because you can procrastinate. Perhaps something else definitely seems more exciting. So it's important to find the things that you enjoy doing and just going deep on it. Like, indulge yourself. I was indulging myself. I'm like, this is really interesting. I get to, like, freely study about the stuff and just learn. And, you know, now I'm doing my little wizardry on my teammates. They don't even know it. But it was something that I just really enjoyed, so I think that's really important.
Jory, what is it about DeAndre's story that drew you to getting her on the podcast?
I think for me, there were a lot of people in my circle during summer when I would do camps. You know, are you going to coach? You should do this. You should be an agent. And there was always a part of me like, man, I don't want to do that. And I just, you never really saw anyone. I mean, not to say, like, obviously, D has done everything, WNBA, played on top leagues and stuff, but still, it's always like that high, high caliber you see. You hear the stories in the media about DeAndre was just like, what? Nah, she played overseas. She's in the same community, and she's going to get her PhD, and she's in the tech space, and she's talking about these things that you don't see many athletes talking about. And it's similar to Abiola, who in her own right did a whole different thing. And so that's what caught my attention, was just like, man, how do you go that way? How do we get to that space? And I think that's just what was intriguing about, you know, DeAndre and other players that I've kind of seen doing something completely different. And I knew I wanted to do something different. Yes, I could always use that if something was to happen. Like, that's natural. That's a default. I think we all know, like, okay, we have the network. If something happens, we could go find our way in that space. But I didn't want to go that route. And so I started to naturally, I guess, attract and find people that were doing something different.
DeAndre, looking at your story, it seemed like you were willing to kind of take risks. And, you know, even when you got turned down from the Hack Reactor twice, like, you,
yeah,
you know, you kept going. You got this PhD. Like, you were willing to put in the time, and you're like, oh, man, maybe this is not, you know, but you did it anyway. And you're like, but you didn't, you just kept going. Like, I think that's something a lot of people struggle with. Like, once they get, especially if they step out of their comfort zone and that door doesn't open,
mm-hmm.
right? That invitation to the table is not delivered, right? Or is not even answered. Like you're knocking on the door, they don't open the door. What is it that just kept you going and being like, you know what, I'm going to put myself out there. I'm going to put these blog posts up. I'm going to, you know, put this website. Like, that's what I got. You just kept putting yourself out there.
Persistence is, you know, that'll take you far, just being persistent. I think that for me, when that happened, especially when I was trying to do the engineering thing, I think of it as like, you know, when you're like doing like walking directions with Google Maps and it's like you're trying to figure out which way to go. So you're like turning the phone like this to figure it out. But it's not until you actually start walking in some direction that you think is the right way till you realize, oh, shit, I'm supposed to be going back that way. We're going the wrong way. That happens all the time. And even the most, like, I don't know why, like, even for myself, it's just, you don't really know which way you're supposed to be going until you start going some way. And I think that's what happened. I wanted to just start moving. Like, the energy when you just move is very contagious. And you will find out a whole lot more than just standing here trying to figure out, okay, which way should I be going? I'm not sure. It really doesn't matter. Like, for me, it didn't matter. I knew a way, and I knew a person or people, my brothers, who knew how to do something very well. They knew how to write code great. I said, okay, you're going to show me how to do that, right? And I'm going to figure out if this is something that I want to do. And that's where I started. I just started moving, right? And then once you start moving, you start coming in contact with things that you didn't really know. Like, you understand a little bit more about the job. Like, you will understand a little bit about more about yourself, right, through those failures when I didn't get into the boot camp, because it was through those failures, I was like, oh, shit, I need to make a right. I'm about to make a right. I'm going to start getting into research because I understand now a little bit more about what engineering is doing in the job. I love it, but I think I can do more than that. I can do more, right? I can provide more. I've got a lot of experiences. Engineering is just like a subset. Made a right, made a turn, right? Started walking again. I'm like, okay, now I... Product. Nope. This is everything that I've already been doing. And then, you know, I started making those connections like we just talked about what it was I was actually already doing that really encapsulated the parts about engineering that I love, the parts about business that I think are really intriguing, the parts about your customer. Like, why is it that you're doing this anyway? Who are you the advocate for? Like, it encapsulated all of that. So, but it wasn't until I started moving till you find that out. I would have never known about any of that had I'm still standing still. And I think I understood that sometimes it just takes time to know. When I was in doing my undergrad, I originally went to school for, I think I was doing like some dental hygienist shit. I'm like, you know what? I started doing that. I'm like, nope, not for me. But it wasn't until I had to start. Like, you can't know these answers until you like begin. And I try to, you know, that's something that I tell, like, my family, I tell everyone. I say, sometimes you don't know, but you got to at least try. And I think sometimes not knowing which way to go stops people from moving altogether. And I think that just kind of slows you down. So I always think back to that Google map example, because it's essentially that. Like, just get going, and that momentum and those learnings that you have along the way, you'll know which way to go, which way to turn at that point. But give yourself a chance to do it, and just understand that these no's is just a part of it. Like we know how to hear a no. Like, I know how to do something and not get what I want. Missing shots, losing games, turnovers, fucking missed layups wide open. Like, all of that shit is like deflating. It's deflating, but I've done it so much. Like, we've done it. This is a part of the game. So why is it that when we start going some direction and we don't get a seat at the table, do we say, oh, shit, this must not be, I'm going to just stop, or this must not be for me? No, you have to keep going, right? You have to keep going. You have to make the adjustment and keep going, because that's, as an athlete, that's what we've been doing. So I feel like we have all the skills. We have all the experience doing all that stuff, but apply it over here. Apply it into your next thing you believe you want to do. Go out and validate it. Is this actually what you want to do? Start doing it and find out. If not, do something else. But the movement is what's really important.
That's a great analogy. I always say that the best way to learn the city is to get lost.
Get lost. I mean, I was in Istanbul. I don't know how many times I got lost in that damn train, but I promise you now, I know how to take all modes of transportation through Turkey. I'm talking about the ferry, tram, the trolley.
You've been on them.
The bus. I feel great now. I've been lost so many times, but getting lost is like really important. Like, you will find your way.
Right. Have you taken the little 10, what's their money? What's the
lira? Turkish lira?
The 10 lira bus, little mini buses, where it's like 10 lira and it's like a whole bunch of random people.
Random as hell first, and stuff.
I found that in Istanbul when I first went. I was like, oh, yes, because I am not paying all that money for the taxis. Yep. And I was like, this exists. This is a nice little system.
Oh, yeah. They have that down in Adana. That's all we did. 10 lira, hop on that joint. Riding down the raggedy roads, and you good. Yep, absolutely. Yeah. All mode of transportation.
Now, Joey, I'm sure in the last few years that you've been working on WeVolve, you've been in spaces, in rooms where you'd never been before, that you're around the type of people you've never been around. Like, how do you adjust to that? And do you ever feel like the people in those rooms looked at you a certain way because you were an athlete? And in what ways do you think that they were looking at you?
Well, I mean, through WeVolve, especially being a sport tech company startup, I've had to interact with people from all different spaces, different backgrounds in entrepreneurship thus far. And of course, they have more knowledge in different areas than me. But I think one thing that I have naturally with, again, my experience coming from New Orleans, living in the UK, Rochester, and then overseas, is just like I have already engaged and interacted with a large number of personalities and stuff. So for me, I usually have tried to remove what they know as knowledge. Like, I don't know about back end development. Like, what do I know? And just try to connect with them on just a base level first. And then not be, I don't deflate myself, as you say. Like, I have confidence in what I bring to the table, my expertise. I know a lot of things they have no insight about, and they're coming into my industry. So, of course, some of them I'm talking to are in the sport industry. So they might know back end, but it could be a little bit of, you know, a little bit of my own confidence. Like, you can know back end, but I can go find many people that know this, but not many people know what I know. So I think I've always had confidence in that, knowing that from the start. But then, of course, I think one of the stigmas athletes have is that we don't follow through when it comes to business ideas, or we say we're going to do this, like, oh, I'm going to do this. I'm going to start this brand. And it's there for a little bit and then it's gone. So I think I have felt where people hear us and they're like, ah, and then they look at us like, okay, yeah, I hear you. But they don't take us seriously. However, lately, the ones that we've been engaging with, that they know we're still here. We're still pushing. Oh, we took a fall with a developer. Now we're back and we're in test flight. We're, you know, and they're like, okay, they're serious. You know, the pitch deck's being refined. Like, we're learning more of how we say this. We're more focused with where we're going. I think, again, it's that persistence that gives us that respect, truthfully. And it's their truth, is what they've experienced maybe with other athletes. And so I can't get mad at that, because that's what they've experienced. Athletes that get excited about something and they don't follow through. For me, I don't really hold it against them. And then just being a woman of color, again, yes, I have sometimes those insecurities a little bit, where it's like, you know, I might be talking to someone like, I don't even know what this person's background is. And they, you know, get on the call and they're a little bit pink or red. And you're like, oh, yeah, I had no idea I was a woman of color, but it's cool. We're going to have the call and rock out with it. So, you know, you come across it. But again, I think now at 33 years old, I've had a number of experiences from being all around the world and dealing with people. It doesn't shake me that much. It's kind of like, okay, I am confident in what I know. You know something that's valuable. I know something that's valuable. And I'm trying to merge those two worlds to create something that's dope. So yeah, that's been my experience thus far with WeVolve.
DeAndre, have you had to deal with any? I mean, you're. I think you're still pretty muscular, jacked. I don't know what the right term is here. Yeah, you're tatted up. I mean, you know, you walk into play. You're 5'10", right? I believe
5'11" for the record.
5'11". Okay, my apologies. I saw 5'10" somewhere. 5'11".
Get it right.
Yeah, like, you know, have you, like, when you've stepped in a room, have you felt the energy change because you...
Absolutely. I think I've gotten so used to that. I'm talking about since I was like a kid. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm talking about in high school. I'm talking about playing AAU. Because I was 15, 16 with tats all down my arm. You know what I mean? Which was not very common, especially for some chicks, right? And I've always just been a muscle head, if you will. But I really took it to the next level in college. But I've kind of always had that, those feelings, right? Like, I know how I'm perceived by others. But I don't internalize that and make it like, okay, this is actually who I am. This is just your perception. I have that awareness, right? But it's always been an innate quality of mine to just be myself, you know? And honestly, I just try to, it does me no service, or Jory, no service, or anyone who wants to come behind me, or the women who have gone before me, to not try to take up as much space as possible. Be yourself always. Like, I'm always just going to be myself. And for sure, it makes a lot of people uncomfortable, because we can be very unassuming. When I say we, I'm talking about athletes, black women, muscular women, queer individuals. Like, we can be very unassuming, right? That's that perception. That's that awareness about how I'm perceived from others. But once you have these conversations, like, we definitely surprise people. Just like Jory mentioned with getting on the call with, I'm sure they didn't know she was black. Jory Davis with a name like that, right? Let's just put it out there. But you have to continue to move in your truth. And that's what I do. I speak like how I'm talking right now is how I talk at work. Nothing necessarily changes, you know. I'm very just candid, like, with who I am. I think people appreciate that. But what you do is, when you show up as yourself, they have to adjust to you. You know, they'll adjust to that. And you'll actually give yourself a chance to form more authentic connections, because you're showing up to yourself. It's easier said than done, I know, but I think it's just very difficult for me to mask, you know, who I am and how I feel. That's for sure. Like I'm a very easy read. It makes me feel better, and I can lean on the people who I have in my life as being like authentic and genuine, because I've shown up as myself, and you're going to attract more people in that way with like mine. So definitely, you always turn some heads. I've always done that, and I always kind of think like, oh, I wonder what they're thinking, and then I stop thinking about it. Like, I think about it for 2 seconds, and I'm like, I don't give a damn. Like, I really don't give a damn. Like, like, it touches me for 2 seconds, I'm like, all right, I'm over it. I don't care. Like, have a good day. So, and sometimes it's not always bad, though. You know, I think the fallback is like that they're making some negative assertions about me. I think because maybe like childhood things, like we're really mean to each other as teenagers and shit like that. But you know, we're dealing with adults, people who are very unassuming themselves and may have some very unique experience themselves. So you never know. It's not always a bad thing that they're thinking. It's nice to know sometimes about those different assumptions that they may be making if you ever do have conversations. But I try to take up as much space as possible and just lean into being myself, and that's taken me really far, and I think it will continue to.
What was your way in? Was it the startup that you worked with? And if it was, how did that come about? Were you just applying to jobs all over the place? And if so, like, where was it? Mostly LinkedIn? Was it Indeed? Like, where? How did that opportunity come about?
So it was Scott, my brother's startup. I did like some small product work for him before the company sunset, as he was trying to go out and really raise some money, do the CEO thing. You know, it's hard. Like, it's difficult trying to do both. But when you're an early stage startup, you kind of have to do both. You have to be the PM. You have to be the CEO. And the CEO takes on a different role than being a product manager when you're trying to actually execute and get things done and communicate with the engineers and keep them inspired. But that takes a lot of time. That's why they're tired and stuff. So I was like, well, let me do it, whatever it was. And we all failed, and that's fine. Like, we learned from the failures of that company. But, you know, by that time, I already had delved into engineering. And so when I was making those turns into product, I was like, hey, this is what I was doing with y'all. This could be something really interesting. It was like, yeah, let's really uncover that a little bit more. Like, let's, you know, turn over that stone. I did apply to some jobs on LinkedIn, but I'm just going to keep it real. Like, that's not really how, and from my experience, how I got jobs. I leveraged my network and just grew it as much as possible. I made connections with people that my brothers knew, started having conversations about the things that they were looking for. Like, my job was meeting people. It's meeting people as much as possible, right? On via Twitter, you know, he will put out a bat signal like, hey, if anyone's looking for a PM, I've got a great recommendation for you. Things like that. Reaching out to the hiring managers when you go to LinkedIn. We'll tell you who the hiring manager is or the recruiter. Message them directly. I'm trying to have as many conversations as possible. That was my job for 8 to 10 hours a day, period. So I didn't do a lot of searching on Indeed. It was really all LinkedIn. Twitter was where I was also active, just reaching out, having conversations with people. And that's really how I got my first job after the startup, was through my brother's network. Really, really awesome company. Still keep in contact with a few people there. Had a great experience. And then I got over to LinkedIn after that. So LinkedIn actually recruited me, did really well in the interview. And that's how I got here. Leverage your network. You know, you can always apply. Like, you're always going to have to apply. But I just haven't seen too many times where people cold apply and get in, unless like your resume is just like, wow, it's all like you want to put a face. It's only so much your resume can say. Like, it's just a blank slate of like your top qualities, your highlights, your world highlights, the best things that you've ever done in your life. And then when you apply and that shit gets rejected, it's like it hurts. It hurts a lot of people. It's like, oh man, like this is like, these are my highlights. Like, how can they? Like, what do you mean? Is my resume bad? Like, no, it's just, it doesn't have a face on it. It doesn't have a voice. Like, you want to have these things right here, and their resume just can't do that. For me, it's a formality. It's a needed formality. You need to have that, right? But leverage those connections and try to reach out and talk to someone so that they can put a face and a voice to that resume once they see it in their system. It's like, oh, shit, I remember Jory. We kind of chit-chatted a little bit. Now it makes more sense. Now they'll remember you a little bit better than, you know, DeAndre, if I just, you know, put my resume in there and didn't really have something else to pinpoint. Give yourself the best opportunity to be remembered and to be thought of, right? And you want to, I think that's the best way to actually get hired. That's honestly what I did. I said, that's honest truth.
So this question is for both of you. Now, we've talked about positive attributes that athletes have that they've developed over the years playing to be a good employee, or to be a good team member anywhere else. Do you guys feel like there's anything negative that they might bring? Like, DeAndre, did you have to like let go of certain things? You know, I mean, obviously there's no screaming and cursing if you miss. Yeah, okay. Things like that. But Jory, you go first. Do you feel like you have anything?
I mean, I'm learning to be a little bit more compassionate. We talk about how sports is so toxic, but I think working with people that aren't athletes, I'm learning like, man, that shit rubbed off on me. You know, it's like it's being just direct, like, yo, we need to get this done. It is a good quality, but then it could also be, you know, you have to find ways to understand that it's not the same environment as a sports team sometimes. And so finding that balance of not totally losing it, because look, it needs to be there, but also I think just not being as direct sometimes and finding a way to balance just kind of like that athlete mentality with being understanding and more compassionate with those you're working with on your team. Yeah. And then tone for me is something that I've had to work on, that everything for some people, how I can change my tone a little bit, which we do in sports, but I think it's kind of accepted to just be like rah, rah, rah or whatnot in the sports space. Whereas here you have different people that like to be talked to and get things communicated to them in a certain way. So I think that's been something like I've had to learn. And then, of course, like there's an element of my brain, I guess, from athletes where it's like instant, you know, you do this and it's there, like, boom, I can go do this. Where now it's like, hey, you got to be patient. This is going to take 5 years. So relax, take a step here each day. And I think I've been still learning to understand that it's a longer journey than a game compiled in 40 minutes. And I have to understand that this thing that I have in my mind, it's not going to happen right now. So plan it out. Let's take steps, take a breath, and just understand. And some days I do have anxiety, but then I'm like, all right, let me go sit outside and just relax. Because so those are my kind of three areas, I think, thus far.
And DeAndre?
That's a really good example, Jory. Like that instant gratification is not there. Like, we could run a play real quick in a timeout, boom, get a bucket, or get a defensive stop, like, boom, you just feel good. Like, that's a quick plan, execute, gratification, boom, right there. And it is not like that. Like, it takes so much longer. I think the biggest change is honestly the communication. Everything we do in terms of like communication from sports to how I work at LinkedIn, it's very different. Not that we don't have verbal conversations, but everything kind of needs to be written, right? Because it needs to be ingested, and you have to kind of work across time zones with different people who, this is, you know, these big global markets. LinkedIn is a global company, but you need to write things down and keep like a directory, repository, a history of all the documentation and things that the decisions that I've made, what was the results of that? Why did we do it this way? But what's the strategy? Like, everything needs to be written. And then you go into like these conversations about, okay, let's kind of pick through this a little bit and kind of get on the same page. But it takes time. Like, it's a lot when you're like shuffling so many things and someone was to come at you and say, hey, Jordy, let's talk about, you know, this and the strategy. Like, you're only going to absorb so much. And I think people understand that. I was like, hey, give me something in written form. I can kind of take my time and digest this and make sense of it. And then let's have a conversation about it. Like, in sports, it's very much, well, we're going to talk about this, right? I might shoot you a text like, yo, where you at? Or we got meetings at, you know, someone sends out, hey, this is a schedule. But for the most part, you're having like verbal conversations, right? It's very different to kind of go put that in written form because it slows you down a little bit. When you write things out, it slows you down, slows your brain down. You have to really think about it, answer some few key questions that, you know, you have to anticipate will come up, right? And that's how you kind of get alignment and things like that is the written conversation. But also have to double down with Jordy. Like, it's like tone of things and, you know, this is not the core. I can't be out here yelling, you know, slapping people's ass like, good job. Like, that's, can't do that. That's just not how it goes. But so you do have to just change. But I will say that I think people enjoy a little bit of energy and that personality and kind of just that, you know, hey, let's go. And I'm really going to get us fired up. Because, I mean, especially they've never really been a part of, you know, this team sports and those dynamics. But it's also like very important when to bring that in, when to tone it down, when to actually ratchet it up a little bit, and just knowing your audience, knowing who these people are and what's going to get them going, that actually doesn't change. You know, that's actually very consistent across sports and what I'm actually doing now. I need to know you and like know what you care about so that we can get on the same page, so that, because we all have essentially one goal right here at LinkedIn. We're one LinkedIn. When we're on the basketball team, we are teammates, we are together, but I need to know like what it is that you care about, right? So that I can help you get there, but also we can be on the same page. So that actually doesn't change so much across these two industries.
Well, thank you, DeAndre Moss, for being unguarded with us today.
Thank y'all for joining us for another episode of Unguarded with DeAndre Moss. Doctor, I know you don't want us to say that, but Dr. DeAndre Moss, go ahead and let that be known. Appreciate you for coming through. Remember, y'all, follow, comment, share, let us know who y'all want on the podcast, all that good stuff. We out.
Thank y'all.
Thanks, DeAndre.